The Internet, the final frontier.
You're listening to Boldly Going Nowhere, and this is the last time you're ever going to hear me say that. Colin, take it away.
Well, hello. This week on Boldly Going Nowhere, we talk about bad commercials, we talk about bad halftime performances, and we have new people joining us. I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we're boldly going nowhere.
Formerly known as Justin's Jukebox. Formerly, you'll see why in a second. So I'd like to consider myself sort of an elder statesman of podcasting here at Castaway Studios, which is ironic, and then I'm the youngest person in the group. But my point is that I've decided after a long time of doing the Justin's Jukebox segment, or just formerly the music segment on Boldly Going Nowhere, that I'm ready to move on to something else. And so I have found a more than suitable replacement for me. Her name's Amanda, Boss Lady, Cusinelli.
I love my introduction as Boss Lady.
And as of this episode, and I will be on this episode in at least probably next few, but as of this episode, she's taking the lead, she's taking charge, and I would pass the torch if I had one. And so I'm going to give her the Rock Snobs Dictionary, and in the hopes that she will continue my tradition of reading entries from the Rock Snobs Dictionary and making Sean crack up.
I will absolutely do that. That sounds awesome.
So what is the new title of our segment?
The new title of this segment is System Soundwave. Oh. Got to keep it generic because I don't know what I'm going to be talking about week to week. It could vary. As this week, it will be the Super Bowl. And also Tuesday releases, which I think I'm going to probably add every week because it seems useful and helpful to those who might not know what's coming out.
Yes. That's another benefit of Amanda being in charge now. She actually is much more up to date with music than I am.
I actually buy music.
So if you're, you know, if you were tired of hearing about albums that came out in 1967, I would rather hear about music that actually is coming out now.
Hey, I never said anything about actually knowing about what's coming out. I'm just going to tell you what's coming out.
Oh, okay. I like your take charge attitude.
Yeah.
I'll go to it.
All right, well, this week we're going to start off with the Super Bowl performances of 2013, or Super Bowl 47, at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, New Orleans. There were three performances this year, first one being Jennifer Hudson and the Sandy Hook Elementary School Chorus. They sang America the Beautiful. The chorus came out first, and they began the song. And later, Jennifer Hudson joined them to completely overpower them, though in a very cute and still soulful way. I don't believe these kids had any idea what opportunity they had by being there. They looked as if they were performing for their parents.
Well, they're kids, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's kids. Really cool. Eventually they'll know what they did.
Oh, someday they're going to be, all of them will be talking to strangers in bars and telling them the same story that they've told people probably for 10 years straight.
Absolutely, I think you're right about that one. Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to say about that, you know. Jennifer Hudson never disappoints. She's got an incredible voice. And backed by those kids, I thought it was just a great way to open the show.
Yeah, maybe she should record her next album with the children's choir.
Hey, you never know, man. Especially since those kids have been through enough, I think it was neat to put them center stage for something good instead of bad.
Yeah.
The next performance that shortly followed after that was Alicia Keys, and she sang the national anthem while seated at a white piano. She sang the longest version of the national anthem that any Super Bowl has seen to date, at 156.4 seconds, or 2.6 minutes, beating Natalie Cole's 152 seconds, or 2.5 minutes in 1994. I wonder if she planned that.
Were you timing it?
No, I looked it up.
You looked it up?
I looked it up.
Okay, because I should have thought to look over to see if you had a stopwatch while we were watching it.
I was wondering, because she was singing it so slow that, you know.
Yeah, she was definitely milking it.
Not really sure what her point of doing that was, other than the fact that she was probably overshadowed by all the other women who were performing that night, so she had to do something that would get talked about.
She needed to keep the camera on her as long as she humanly could.
I mean, she looked stunning, but, you know, she was sitting down behind a piano. She wasn't shaking it like Beyonce, who did our halftime show.
Oh, boy.
Which was very interesting. Beyonce was slated to do the halftime show, but of course everybody knew that a Destiny's Child reunion was probably going to happen. Beyonce came out and performed solo with many digitally created Beyoncés, which I found to be a little overdoing it. Because
really?
If one wasn't enough, I mean 15 should have been great.
Well, as I said, all my years of playing video games prepared me for this moment of figuring out which one was the real Beyonce.
I know it was tough.
It's the one that spins around, like in the pose in the Force Temple and the No OT.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's that one boss in Shinobi 3 that
yes.
does that. There are many analogies we could make. Let's just go
Well, on. if 2015, 30 Beyoncé's wasn't enough, eventually she was joined by two backup dancers, which I'm pretty sure was a tease because everybody's waiting for the other two to come out, and she's bringing two randoms out, and then three, and then 20 more Beyoncé's.
Yeah.
She did sing a couple...
Beyoncé's.
Yeah.
20 Beyoncé's.
20 Beyoncé's, there you go. She did sing a bunch of her solo hits, including Love on Top, Crazy in Love, End of Time, and Baby Boy, all of which I knew nothing about. She was later finally joined by Kelly Rowland and Michelle Williams to create Destiny's Child. But did anybody else notice that Beyoncé's mic volume was significantly higher than her Destiny's Child ladies?
Yeah,
Beyoncé's mic was on and Destiny's Child, everyone else's
was off. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, if you imagined it, you could hear them, but I couldn't hear them, and I'm pretty sure she planned that because, God forbid, anybody does better than Beyoncé.
Yeah, I really do not want to see what the scene was like in the green room afterwards.
Maybe the mics didn't have enough power.
That was probably a frosty scene.
That's a good point. Maybe they weren't providing enough power.
That was the foreshadowing. That
yeah.
was foreshadowing to the inevitable blackout, which, of course, the big news about that.
Well, I thought that was ridiculous, especially after her little inauguration stint. I thought she needed to
actually sing?
Yeah, she had to do something that would make her look good, and I don't think that did it. I think that if she was going to pull this reunion together, she should have done it.
Although
properly.
You disagreed. What did you describe Beyoncé as in terms of physical appearance?
Oh, a dude. I think she looks like a dude. A really well-crafted one into a female.
There's a specific phrase I think you used.
She's a really hot dude.
I'm not sure. What did I say?
I think you said she has man face.
I think Beyoncé has man face.
I'm pretty sure that I'm probably one out of one that it agrees with that, but I'm pretty sure she was a dude in some past life, but whatever.
I mean...
There is no doubt, though, that the performance was very lit. There was lots of lights and fire and...
It was certainly illuminated.
Beyoncé's.
Oh, can I also just say I really liked the chick with the Macy Gray fro with the guitar shooting out sparks from both ends that she was clearly not playing.
Yeah,
I thought that was Prince at first.
Really?
Yeah. Well, this Super Bowl had the highest ratings in record history with over 100 million tuning in. Unfortunately, Beyoncé's halftime ratings still hit below Madonna's 2012 performance. Not really surprised about that, but too bad for Beyoncé. The performance was concluded shortly following a blackout of the Superdome. Now, at some point in the performance, Beyoncé used her hands to flash a diamond symbol that many are speculating was a signal to her Illuminati brethren to commence Operation Darkness, in quotes, Operation Darkness. I find this quite funny because I missed this symbol, she quite clearly flashed it with both of her hands, and I thought
really
funny.
Everyone knows her and Jay-Z are top-ranking members of the Illuminati.
Yes.
I'd like to think that the Illuminati were so smart they'd be able to come up with a better name than Operation Darkness.
Well, I thought that was pretty good.
Do you think all the Scion cars blow up now or something?
I thought Operation Darkness would have been enacted last year when the darkness came back from obscurity.
Well, that could have been phase one of Operation Darkness.
Yeah.
This could be a long-running...
What phase is Tom Hanks's mullet?
What?
Keep going. The NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell. Goodell, is that right?
Yes.
Goodell, said that there was no indication that her performance caused any sort of blackout.
That's a lie.
But by the end of the night, we knew that NFL stood for no fucking lights, so who knows? Beyoncé was quoted as saying that it was a proud day for African-American women, which is absolutely true because that's all that performed. African-American women, which, hey, good for them. That's awesome. But I'm glad she noticed.
Real blackout of
because
that.
Because I'm pretty sure she...
Yeah.
Let's not make this racial.
Too late.
I'm not making it racial.
Hey, for more racial tweets, go to @BGNPodcast.
I thought the other ladies did just as well, man. She just, you know, really, really overdid it. But she's allowed. She got the halftime show. But I also thought it would have been cool if maybe the other two came out and performed with her or next to her or instead of her. That would have been great. But, you know, what happened, happened. It's all good. All right, I don't think there's much else to say about the performances. I mean, obviously, everyone enjoyed it. A majority more than didn't, so that's
yeah, awesome. Which is honestly surprising to me because, I don't know, I just, there was not much for me to latch on to in terms of, like, ridiculous things that I could talk about around the proverbial water cooler, because with Madonna, you had that ridiculous, you know, tightrope walker guy, you had... You know, Nicki Minaj, you know, giving the finger to everyone. You had just all sorts of weird things going on with Madonna's body. I mean, there was plenty, you know, whether you thought it was a good show or not, there was plenty to talk about. You know, Madonna dropping out of that stage, you know, at the end, going back to whatever underworld she came from. I mean, there was plenty to talk about with Beyonce's show, other than the, you know, holographic Beyonce army
fembots,
yeah,
20 ounces,
and you know the rest of Destiny's Child getting shafted. It was like, it wasn't bad enough for me to really make fun of, but it wasn't good enough for me to really rave about. So,
well, I think the most noticeable thing with the Beyonce performance is the fact that she did have the least amount of clothes out of everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, that's got to be some sort of accomplishment. She
certainly got some legs.
Is it sad that I thought her performance in Goldmember was far superior?
I think her acting is much better than her singing, to be honest with you.
No, I'm not talking about, like, her singing in the Goldmember dance room scene. I thought it was, like...
Yeah, well,
was,
you know, that's a studio. You know, that's studio record. That's a different scenario.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. National Anthem.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the Tuesday releases, because for some reason, this week of February 5th, 2013, has a hell of a lot of them. Though I am only going to go through a few select ones, you know, ones people might actually know about. I didn't know half of them.
Okay.
The first one, Bjork's putting out her third remix album, Bastards, featuring tracks from her seventh studio album, Biophilia. That's awesome. No idea.
Okay.
Harry Connick Jr. Yeah.
Yeah, we know of him.
Smokey Mary, that's his new album. Named after the famed Mardi Gras parade float. Of the same name, which I think is funny. It's coming out tomorrow after all this fun New Orleans stuff yesterday.
Well, that would seem appropriate.
This one I'm excited about, Josh Groban. All That Echoes. Love Josh Groban.
Yeah, I know some real Josh Groban fans.
Well, they're all female, I'm sure, right? His sixth studio...
Female or, you know, just males who are...
In touch.
In touch, yeah. That seems like a diplomatic way of saying it.
This is his sixth studio album featuring his usual mix of English and foreign language tracks. I say foreign language because he likes to switch it up on me, and I'm not sure exactly what he's got going on in this one, though I did read the titles, and there are definitely some foreign ones.
Misfits. Was it French?
I don't know. The Misfits are putting out an album, Dead Alive, which they cleverly arranged on the album for the A and Alive to move vertically down from the A and Dead, so it looks like DEA dot D Alive.
Sweet.
It's very interesting. This is their third live album release, and from what I understand, they only recorded the songs they're allowed to record, since, you know, the whole Misfits thing. They're only allowed to use whatever songs some people didn't write. No names to be added today. Silverstein is putting out a new album. This is How the Wind Shifts, seventh studio album from the band. Tim McGraw, Two Lanes of Freedom. Available
Yeehaw.
Regular and deluxe versions.
Oh, what comes on the deluxe version?
Oh, the deluxe edition features four additional songs, totaling an extra 18 minutes of Mr. McGraw.
That's a highway to America. Take the interstate, America.
Any, like, goodies? Any, you know, posters?
You know, I don't
anything
think so.
Packaged
as far as I
it?
Understand, it's just all this extra time of stuff. I don't know.
Okay, just more songs.
No cowboy hats? No tricorded American flags? Nothing like that?
You gotta have swag if you're gonna have a deluxe edition. That's the rule.
True. I will say this, though. I did find it, I don't know if the word disturbing is correct, because I know nothing about Tim McGraw. I did find out that he really doesn't write any of his songs.
Really?
So these extra songs are just more songs that somebody had written for him.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that, so that was interesting for me to find out, but I'm not gonna be rushing out to get Tim McGraw. And that leads me to my most anticipated release for February 5th, 2013. The new Coheed and Cambria, The Aftermath Dissension.
Yes.
Which is their seventh studio album and second part of a double album. First album in the set is The Aftermath Ascension. If interested, the deluxe version is released with a coffee table book said to give a song-by-song experience of the concept album. Now, for most of you...
See, that's a deluxe edition.
Yeah, comes there with you go. Book. And it's hardcover as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, is a bonus. And for those of you who know anything about Coheed and Cambria, you know that they originally started with the story of Coheed and Cambria, right. But this album particularly follows the adventures of Sirius Amory and his ascent into the Spaceway. And there's a whole bunch more added to that, but I figured I'd keep it brief because.
But is it still within the mythos of Coheed and Cambria?
Yes, because they said that once the story is over, they will change the name of the band and start over.
That's what I was wondering, because just in case, you know, just to clarify, people do not know, Coheed and Cambria is not the name. It's not the name of the people in the band. It's the name of the characters in the story.
They're kind of like Hootie and the Blowfish that way.
Yes.
In a sense, but
I know almost nothing about music.
Similar hairstyles too.
But, hey, don't make fun of Claudio. The man's a god. He knows what's up.
I mean, not as bad as the guys in Mars Volta.
Oh God, they broke up. Thank you.
Yes.
Finally.
Thank.
Anyway,
okay.
Let's
I'm
move
glad
on.
You hate Mars Volta.
Oh,
just
I had
as much
to
as
see them live with System of a Down, and that was the worst live
act. Were you bleeding
act
from
I've
your
ever
eardrums
it
by the end of that?
It was 30 minutes of no break between songs. I've never been to a concert where people complain right. So much, but they should. Have
Let
also.
Me just say real quick, Mars Volta is one of those bands, and I'm sure everyone has at least one where you're like, you were into them, and then you're actually so embarrassed of the fact that you used to listen to them that you try to hide all traces of their music. You know. Get rid of the CDs, try and hide the fact that you ever even listened to them, which clearly I'm defeating that by talking about it on the podcast, but...
Hey, they broke up. It's all good. They have better things to do. They
God,
fought with each other. There's only two of them. They fought with each other. It's over. Done.
Oh,
it's
Asia.
Like a dentist
back under
drill
the rug.
In your ear.
Well, back to the good band.
Yeah.
Coheed and Cambria. I have heard four songs from this 9-track album.
Oh, they put a lot out on
they
Facebook.
They have pretty much put all of them out by this point, but I've only heard four, so I'm going to talk about four of them. All
right.
The first one being The Hard Sell, second being Dark Side of Me, third Iron Fist, and fourth Number City. I absolutely love The Hard Sell and Dark Side of Me, but I am not so... I am halfway between like and love on the other two. But that's only because they like to switch it up so much that you have to almost get used to it before you can admit that you like it. It's almost like a... it's like they want you to work at it. But, after hearing Aftermath Ascension, the first part of this double album and all of the singles, I'd say Coheed has finally caught up to themselves because they were once labeled as avant-garde, if you knew that.
Yes.
And I think they're finally caught up to that because I'd say now that they're more prog rock, alt rock, and even more of a post-hardcore heavy metal thing going on now. I mean, they have a lot of sounds, but I think at least we can put a name to it now. Whereas
yeah,
before it was like, what kind of music is it? It's Coheed and Cambria.
I always consider them pretty squarely in the prog rock wheelhouse.
I would also agree with that, but I think that these last two albums put them closer to, and only hearing four songs,
yeah,
puts them closer to more of an alt sound to me. Mm-hmm. I think it's more widespread, well, I think it has more of an airplay, more... pronounced like across different people, whereas you know most people hear his voice and they're like, "Oh hell no."
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his voice, but I think we were talking about Mars Volta too, and there is some similarities between their style. It's just that basically Coheed and Cambria sounds like if Mars Volta actually listened to what they were playing. It was like,
see, I can't
oh.
even put them in the same category. I think Mars Volta was trying to be Coheed and Cambria and failed miserably, though.
Right.
They do have a great big audience of people who love them, and that's cool, whatever. I mean, someone's got to cry over them breaking up. It just wasn't me.
All right, well, let me just ask you real quick on the subject of bands with, like, incredibly layered concept stories spanning multiple albums. Are you a fan of The Deer Hunter?
You know, I'm not experienced enough to actually talk about them. They are a band that I am working on
love
getting
it.
Into.
Love it.
And see, now
so
that's how we work with each other
so
here,
good.
Sir. You're going to have to let me listen to some of that
I,
stuff.
I
but,
have all three albums that he's put out so far.
Okay, well, then I would be more than willing to listen to them, absolutely. All
right.
Well, you know, that's enough of me talking about how much I love Coheed. That does come out again on the... 5th of February, and for those of you who ordered the special deluxe editions, super fandom people like myself, you get to hear it early, 3:00 in the morning.
Cool.
That's when I will be downloading.
Or
it.
You know, just going.
And then you know, then you'll have your hard copy for those of you like myself who actually go get them because I must have them. Last thing, if you are interested in picking up any of these albums, they are all available on Amazon. So if you go to castwavestudios.com, you can actually click through us to go to Amazon. And from there, you can purchase any of these albums and the many more I didn't even mention.
At castwavestudios.com/Amazon.
/Amazon. There we go. You can go to castwavestudios.com/Amazon.
Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios Amazon page. Go to castwavestudios.com and click the Boldly Going shopping tab and search for everything from Apple iPads to zebra striped Snuggies. Oh, it's so cozy. This supports the studio and helps keep the lights on. Click the Boldly Going shopping tab at castwavestudios.com.
Well, welcome to BGN at the Movies. I'm Colin. Sean's over in the corner.
Hello.
Unfortunately, because of the game, we didn't really see a movie.
No, we did not. Because, you know, the Super Bowl's important.
Yes. It's a once in a year event.
Yes. I was gonna say we did almost watch Vertical Limit, but it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah. We were gonna watch Vertical Limit and laugh at Bill Paxton, but you weren't there.
Didn't Stephen Hawking make a song, early song about Bill Paxton?
We wanted to, but we only started writing a few lyrics, and then.
That film is a timeless classic.
Oh, it totally is.
It's just the most wonderful film.
It is. But, so, we decided, instead of talking about a film, we're going to talk about a big portion of the Super Bowl, which was the commercials for this year.
Yes.
And I'm going to say this, not many memorable commercials, at least not in the way of good commercials, I should say.
Yeah, they were okay. A lot of them were kind of sleazy.
Yeah.
So there was no commercial that haunts my mind quite like that one several Super Bowls back in which the mechanical car building Waldo arm gets laid off, so he commits suicide like 6 times in a row. So buy GM, everyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's.
I don't remember that commercial.
I don't either. What was that for?
Cars. I don't really remember which one exactly, but.
Even though the commercial was totally America, I will say it did hold my attention for the entire 45 seconds, and that was the Dodge.
The
Dodge speech commercial.
Oh, actually, funny, you should start with that. Alright, I want to go around the table, and I want to go with what was your favorite, and then what was your worst. So we'll go around, go one at a time, but I see Jordan has a point to make, so why don't we start with you, Jordan?
Well, mostly I just wanted to tip my hat also to Dodge's "If you are not a farmer, then God pisses on you from atop his mighty cloud." PowerPoint presentation that they had with that. But,
I think they were trying to be like, "Hey, you know, farmers are the backbone of America," but it's just like, if you're not a farmer, you're a fucking asshole. Buy Dodge Ram.
it's like everybody that wasn't a farmer is watching the ad going, "Well, fuck you too, Dodge."
Right?
Dodge is totally my company, and that one made me cry a little bit. I was like, really? Really at the end? I was like, Dodge, come on.
I think we were all taking bets that it was going to be another really shitty Budweiser commercial, and then right at the end, Dodge trucks. What?
I thought it was for jeans.
Man, I thought it was for jeans. What do you think, Sean?
Well, here's the thing. It was missing one crucial element in any Dodge commercial, and that is Sam Elliott. That you can't have that much mustache missing from your truck commercial. I mean,
wait,
seriously.
Who did the Like a Rock commercial? Was that Ford or was that Dodge?
Ford was built Ford Tough, so I don't think it's Like a Rock.
I'm pretty sure it was Dodge.
Dodge was Like a Rock?
I think.
I think that was Dodge. I don't remember. Okay, so anyway.
I thought Chevy.
Could be. All right, so Jordan, what was your favorite commercial?
Oh, gosh. They were all so bad.
I know.
I guess by default, I'm going to have to make this one my favorite just because it's so easy to laugh at, and that would be the complete devastation of Psy. In which he Gangnam Styles pistachio nuts.
Yeah.
Like, and I also love how incredibly cheap the commercial looked for a, you know, multi-million dollar Super Bowl commercial that Psy is just kind of horsey dancing in a white void, surrounded by a bunch of people in really ratty-looking foam pistachio nut suits.
Actually, the funniest thing about that is that those kind of commercials always tank the careers of those people who are in them, like Chad Ochocinco, like 2 years ago. Mm. Who's heard from him since? All right, Amanda, you were saying something.
Yeah, I wanted to add to the cheapness of it. Well, they had to make pistachio nuts look cheap because his suit looked expensive.
That's where the budget went.
There's where the budget went. There you go.
Possibly. I would have thought that he has a collection of those, considering the music video, but not sure. I looked at that, and of course, yeah, the lyrics have been altered to, like, frickin' Gundam style. Hey, crack those nuts now.
Kraken style.
Yeah.
I had two thoughts. One... one was that I guess Fox News completely when they reported that he hates America, they just completely destroyed his career, didn't they? And also, you know, when it was like 1991 when EMF came out with Unbelievable, certainly the one hit to go with their Wonder, and it was about 15 years until those Kraft crumb grillable things in a bag came out, which were accompanied by like the things you bake, those perfect meal just gives you away. Crumb-believable. Oh,
so
I'm like that took
unbelievable
15 years.
I mean, I do
to subject themselves to that. What the hell is size excuse?
They did I don't know. That. I remember right. that. Zach, favorite commercial.
My favorite had to be. Regretfully, I cannot remember the brand. I don't even remember what they were selling, but the one where Deion Sanders was like miserable and redrafted under the false name Leon Sandcastle with the afro.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And like the announcer sitting there going, "Who is that guy? I don't know. He looks like a really ugly Deion Sanders." That was a really funny commercial.
It shows that Deion Sanders can take a joke about himself.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was a wonderful.
Oh, I just wanted to clarify. Were we also doing least favorite commercial too, or are we just
we're gonna do favorites right now?
Everyone doing favorite, and then everyone doing.
Yes.
Favorite.
Okay, all right. Let's see. So come to me next. My favorite commercial. I'm gonna have to give it to the Tide commercial with the Joe Montana stain.
Yes.
That was funny for two reasons. One, the funniest joke of the night was done by a freaking detergent company. I mean, who saw that coming?
No one.
I mean, I thought, okay, Budweiser might pull out at least one funny one. I mean, they've had at least a decent track record of making at least one decent commercial.
Too Hot to Trot.
Well, I think we're all going to have a lot to say about Budweiser when we come back around.
Yeah,
so
but, yeah, so I would say the best one is going to be the Tide commercial, just because, A, it was cleverly written, and B, it was making fun equally of both teams. Mm-hmm. So I feel that was the best one of the night. All right, Justin.
I'm also going to go with Tide Joe Montana commercial. And honestly, the biggest reason is that because it was simple. Like, we'll get more into this when we come back around and talk about our least favorite ads, but so many of them were just tried to do these weird, abstract, like, bizarre concepts. And Tide was just like, we're going to go for a simple joke and we're going to nail it.
Yeah.
And they did.
Less is more.
Less is more.
Keeping with your theme of simple jokes, I like the Doritos commercial with the goat and the man hoarding the Doritos chips.
So is that your favorite?
And the revenge of the goat. Yes. It was. It just made me laugh.
Very good. All right, Amanda.
I think I have to agree with you guys that the Tide commercial was probably the funniest, but I think that the close second was also the Doritos commercial. I just think that the Tide one was even just a little bit more memorable because I remember that one beginning to end, whereas the Doritos commercial, I remember what happened, but not beginning to end, if you will. But they
go
both were
Ravens.
They were both very funny, and yes. Probably the top two. And the round of least favorite will probably be much more exciting.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead now. Let's go to least favorite commercial, and I guess we're going to start right back where we started. So, Jordan. Least favorite.
I can't help but just throw a giant blanket over all those god-awful Budweiser commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, okay, you know.
Amen.
If you've been, if you've been following us for a while, and really, why wouldn't you? You know that I'm not a drinker. I really, really dislike beer. And right. even with me throwing that huge blanket over an entire beverage, I can say that Budweiser is the worst of the worst. And yet they're so popular that they were able to buy, like, what, 5-6 different commercial slots? Mm-hmm. And each one was more horrible than the last.
And I don't know if you know this, but Anheuser-Busch, the company that owns Budweiser, owns 60% of all beers sold commercially in America, maybe more. I think it's like it's split between Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, and one or two other large companies. But
I miss when Budweiser was the funny commercial you were looking for.
What happened to the frogs?
What happened to the frogs? I mean, at least that was somewhat funny.
Classic. What happened to the WhatsApp?
The Bud Light commercials from years ago. Come on.
You remember the parrots?
Personally happy that the What's Up thing is dead.
Well, I am too, but I'm just saying, at the time, it was good. Mm. In my opinion, I don't care.
I think
I'll just quickly skewer probably my least favorite of the ones that are already kind of melding together in my mind, and it's hard to distinguish them. The one in which these two guys carry a couch, like, across the country and get stared at by bums and train conductors, and then they arrive at the house of, I want to say, Little John, who is
Stevie Wonder.
That was Stevie Wonder?
It is Stevie Wonder.
Wow.
Stevie Wonder
looks like Little John now, and he's cosplaying as the villain from the Princess and the Frog.
I thought he looked like one of the Everly Brothers.
And they say, it's like, can you voodoo this couch? And he's like, nah, I'll have my assistant do that. So he summons a scantily clad voodoo woman to
any scantily clad woman. It was Zoe Saldana from Avatar and Star Trek.
Oh.
But that was supposed to sell it, obviously.
Yes.
I realized it was her before I realized it was Stevie Wonder, which is sad because I know Stevie Wonder.
I didn't even recognize her. Maybe if I had seen The Losers, that would have given me the edge. Anyway, so she just kind of rubs her ass on the couch, and then the punchline is, this was their friend's lucky couch, and they hate him, so they unluckied his lucky couch.
You make it sound really awesome right now.
Am I? I'm not trying to.
You're doing a good job of making it sound cool.
I'm sorry. I better pass the torch on you, Zach.
Again, bringing it back to Budweiser. Now, I can appreciate the chair one a little bit, but obviously it was horrible. I appreciate when Budweiser tries to go for the jokes. That's what we appreciate, besides like the cheesy Clydesdale commercials. But the absolute worst.
Damn, you didn't even have coconuts.
Was this new,
amazing.
I believe it was Thanks. Budweiser. The first commercial we got with Budweiser was some kind of premium beer, black bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided that because this is our premium, it's going to be more expensive, it's going to be nicer, it's going to be like, so we can't do like funny, plucky, silly ads. We have to do like a really stupid hipster party where everybody wears black.
Yeah, I want
to
talk about
and
that
sit there
too.
And dance around the room and go, this is a beer for professionals. It's what, like, where are we, what are you going for that? Nobody's going to buy that beer and stand next to somebody in like a half suit and go, yeah, clearly I'm cooler than the guy over there that's drinking Killian's Irish Red.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't do it. Like, and there were like four of them.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to hold my thought on that commercial till we get to me, because I have nothing to say about that commercial.
My first thought on that commercial was the fact that usually when you hear like black label beer, it's usually some sort of like darker beer. I can still see through the bottle, and that is what confused me. I'm like, how can you put a black label on something that looks exactly like the rest of the beer you have? And that was my issue with that one, but...
Yeah, what
do I know?
I can only imagine what possible differences were actually in this. And they made a lot of work into that idiotic house party scene to try and sell it, and it was just like, guys, just be funny.
Yeah, it's a big problem that Budweiser had this year is that, you know, they were known for funny, clever ads, you know, basically promote the fact that they sell piss water, but what are you gonna do? All right, so we're on to me now. My least favorite commercial, and Amanda's probably going to be upset with me about this, is the Got Milk ad with The Rock.
Terrible. Oh, come on.
Terrible.
I'm sorry.
That was a great ad.
It is not a great ad. I'm sorry.
Yes, it is.
It starts off with The Rock just, you know, preparing his breakfast for his kids. And he's like, oh, we're out of milk. And his kids have this horrified look on their face, like their mom just died of ovarian cancer. And he's like, I'll be right back. He runs out the door, and he runs into a little girl. And the little girl's like, mister, look. And her cat's in a tree. He's like, sucks to be you, kid. I'm off.
on the rock. He runs off, and then out of nowhere, there's a lion on top of a car. There's an old woman saying, "Save me!" And he's like, "Can't be bothered trying to get milk." But now, then what is it? Then aliens start landing and start fucking up the city they live in, and then
you're forgetting about the bank robbers with those really ski masks with the big poof on the top.
Oh yes, that one. I mean, your bank robbers in like 70s era ski masks. That's pretty bad. And then aliens start landing, and finally he gets the fucking milk. But he doesn't go to a grocery store. No. He stops at a milk truck. This is randomly parked, and he's just like, "Hey, milk." And the guy just hands him milk, and he's just like, "Thanks." Walks away. That how it works nowadays? I can just walk up to a milk truck and be like, "Hey, milk, give me." Thank you.
I think the problem here is people actually smelt what the rock was cooking because the milk was spoiling.
I can believe it.
I personally felt it was odd that the whole world expects him to be a superhero when he's just toddling around in a plain white t-shirt and jeans. He looks like Cody from Final Fight.
Yeah.
But he's...
Yeah, but
the rock.
You didn't finish the commercial. What happens after he gets the milk?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what drives it home.
I'm sorry. He gets the milk and gets back and prepares his kid's breakfast. And he's like, taking a sip of milk. He's like, "I gotta go to work." Punches an alien that was about to crawl into our apartment's face. When the fuck did He-Man become Defender of the Universe?
Hey.
I mean, sorry. When did the Rock become Defender of the Universe? That's He-Man's job.
He's a master of the universe.
Shut up, I don't care.
We've been over this before.
Oh, you're getting it all wrong. I'm getting it all wrong.
Clearly. I'm just going to go ahead and say that this was just too far ahead of you, sir.
I guess so.
Clearly, you've never seen Fast Five.
Oh, apparently not.
I never had a Fast Five.
You're going to need to because Fast Six is coming.
Clearly, you didn't know.
Yes, but it is comfortable.
Oh, thank you.
All right, who's Justin. Going next?
All right, well, that's going to be a tough one to follow, damn it, Colin. Okay, yeah, I also want to just continue heaping shit on Budweiser, because I've never seen a company shoot themselves in the foot like they did with the Super Bowl commercials. Because if you think about the amount of money they must have invested in the Super Bowl this year, I mean, yeah, it's Anheuser-Busch, they have, like, all the money, but still, that must have cost them a fortune, and to produce not a single decent ad when it... Budweiser, as we said, is usually the one we can count on to at least have one or two solid ones. But yes, that Bud, like, premium black label beer, I was like, okay, first of all, that is not a party I would ever want to go to. That place looks terrifying. There's no way people who go to that kind of party are drinking beer. Most of them are probably doing cocaine. Sort of designer ecstasy, MDMA, some sort of drugs that we're not even rich enough to know about.
Which also means they could stomach the original Budweiser. They didn't have to put up the extra money for the better one.
That looked like the party from Eyes Wide Shut.
I'm going to go on the limb and say that at least half of the people at that party woke up without kidneys. Yeah. It just looked like that kind of scene.
Yeah.
You wake up in a bathtub.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. Like, those people are, like, just so... They're the kind of people who are so good-looking that it's actually creepy, where it's actually... They're so good-looking that it's not even attractive. It's, like, scary.
Yeah, it was like the vodka commercials.
Like the Calvin Klein concept thing. That's I hated, which I think I had a pretty decent tweet with.
Yeah, xylophone
Calvin
ribs.
Klein concept. The concept is terror.
Yeah.
That looked like some sort of, like, 1984 propaganda commercial.
I when I saw it, I could just see a bunch of people around a boardroom table saying that we haven't come up with a name for this new underwear, so let's just pour over the concept art until inspiration strikes us. And like 5 days later, concept, screw it. We're there at the top.
Let's take a look.
You want to call it art? You want to call these art underwear? That's stupid.
Yeah, I'm imagining all of the, like, you know, like, bloated Americans watching the Super Bowl, like, covered in Cheeto dust with, like, you know, a shitty Budweiser hand. They see this immaculate Adonis in, like, silhouette on the screen, and then they just look down and they're like, well, shit.
Just drag our ass to the nearest 7-Eleven.
I can't even. No.
I don't think anyone came out of watching that commercial feeling good about themselves.
No
one did. All right, Sean. Least favorite.
Least favorite. I would have to say it's the The singing fish, I had no idea what was going on.
Oh, the Bex commercial.
I don't know why. Why do I associate this beer with a singing fish?
Yeah, I was
Finding Nemo, you're confusing me.
Yeah, and the song selection for the fish.
Yes. Yeah, what was that song?
I love that song, though.
It's old. No, that's all
diggity.
I remember.
Yeah, no diggity. Yes.
Way you work it.
No diggity.
I love that song.
I love that song, too. And I love the remake by Oliver Brown. But damn it. Yeah, a fish that does not
coming out of the thing, like... Pixar character.
I myself was so disappointed with the Obsidian Goldfish singing ancient rap songs that I just kind of assumed that was also Budweiser.
It was surprising when Beck showed up. We were like, what? Yeah.
This is the first time America's been seduced by a fish. For beer.
Bestiality percentages go up over it.
Ugh. Alright, so, Amanda.
I will say that my least favorite commercial changed today, because while I was at the gym, there were quite a number of older ladies talking about how much they loved the Clydesdale commercial, and how much they cried because it was so sweet, and I think that made me hate it even more.
Yeah.
Frau Brucker.
I just felt like there was another chapter they left out at the end of that one that is probably worth talking about, but yeah. I'm pretty sure they ran away together and had happy... fun time with each other and became best friends.
Centaur baby.
I was gonna say, it was funny that you mentioned that because I was about to come back around to the last category we're gonna talk about because we're gonna wrap it up here. The two commercials that I was the most uncomfortable with, and I'm like seriously, like I was about ready to say I need to turn the TV off and I need to collect myself so that I can. It is the Calvin Klein concept commercial.
Yes.
And
come on, GoDaddy. GoDaddy.
Say
GoDaddy.
It.
GoDaddy.
It's not GoDaddy.
Are you serious?
I hated that
this
commercial.
This is the sound of the commercial.
it's horrible.
I forgot about that commercial. It was
the Clydesdale commercial that Amanda just mentioned, and it was the concept commercial. The concept commercial is just, it's the normal Calvin Klein affair where everything's in black and white and they got that weird European music playing in the background. But I'm like, I'm looking, this dude is just like running at the camera in place. I'm like, are you ever gonna get anywhere? And it keeps moving around and it keeps focusing on his muscles and on his face. I'm like, dude, okay, we get it. He's better than us. Fucking... move on.
You know, if he gets a cold or he gets sick and he tries to lose weight and his body's trying to withdraw like the extra body fat around his body, he's fucked.
Yeah. All right. Yes.
One quick question.
Yes.
Was I the only one that felt really awkward about the M&M commercial about love where he's singing and then when they try
then
to
they
eat,
try
he's
to
like
eat
singing,
his, yeah,
he's singing not this way,
I
not this way.
I forgot about that one. But you know what I'm surprised no one also brought up was the VW commercial where they're Jamaican accents
good.
For some reason.
Our German engineering will turn you into a Jamaican.
Like, yes. Should I be offended by this? I mean,
there's
I don't know what's more annoying. I don't know. That's a very good point. I don't know what's more annoying. Is it that, you know, if you drive a VW, you turn into Bobby McFerrin in the 1980s. I mean, Jesus, it was so irritating. Oh. But that brings us back to another point, because we tweeted about that when that commercial came around, because I think four or five of us tweeted the exact same subject. It was like, this commercial is making us, like, it's like, that. I'm offended by this, and I don't know why.
It was just, it was an uncomfortable evening all around in terms of commercials.
Yes, Jordan.
Very quickly, going back to the Clydesdale commercial.
No.
My mind did not lean towards bestiality like the average populace, unfortunately. Maybe I'm just an outcast that way.
Frau Brucker.
But after this guy raises the horse from childhood and he gets to be in the show drawing the Budweiser sleigh through a parade, and then afterwards he tearily stuffs him into a Budweiser truck with the Budweiser logo plastered everywhere on the exterior, just sort of meekly waves goodbye to him. I remember thinking to myself, they're gonna make that horse into beer. He's going to the beer factory.
He's
going to
for an extra price, you can
lots of other horses.
Fun times.
For an extra price, you can see the donkey show.
Get the blender ready.
Oh, God. Well,
Well, yeah, so obviously we can say there was a lot more to laugh at than to really enjoy from this particular Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because most of the enjoyment we got out of the Super Bowl this year were laughing at shitty commercials and the tweeting updates.
Mm. And especially finding out that 20,000 people followed the Super Bowl Lights Twitter feed.
No. 26,500.
Oh, wow. 26,000 people.
And right. After about 20 minutes, it was down to about 19,000.
I'll make a last-minute plug for BGN at the Movies. Go to youtube.com/castwavestudios. Subscribe and check out all of her videos there, including BGN at the Movies.
Yes, and also don't forget to go to castwavestudios.com/Amazon and shop through to buy whatever movies. Maybe, hey, if we're lucky, if they put this Super Bowl on DVD, we get all 30 minutes of that blackout coverage.
Yes.
Yes, please.
That'll be fun.
Yes, please.
All right, well, thank you for listening to BGN at the Movies, and thank you for listening to Boldly Going Nowhere, and that's going to end things for us here.
I like your hat.
Thank you.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.
Understand what's going on.
You'll know in 5 seconds.
You'll get there. Basically, somebody at this table needs to start buying the pens.
Who farted?
Not sniff the air.
Did someone fart?
I farted like 2 minutes ago.
It smells like Brad's rod chips.
Kale reached maximum diffusion.
Kale, seriously, I just stepped on your bag.
Why is it
if you know what she means?
Okay.
It smells like my ass after KFC night. Right. It smells like right now.
Hopefully this won't be too distracting. Wow. I'll do this at like 5 minute mark.